Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, July 23rd, 2020, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Wow, that was nice. That's a intro theme that was best listened to in stereo. So I apologize that this is going out in mono for you out there, but the three of us got to hear it in stereo. That was created by Alex. Thank you so much, Alex, for submitting our theme music for this week. I apologize. It will not be our permanent theme going forward because it was 28 seconds long, but a good entry nonetheless. And welcome to the podcast this week. I'm Norm, joined, of course, by Jeremy Williams.
I think you're sharing your computer sound still. No?
I am. There it goes.
Thank you. Yes. Hi, Norm. I love the music. I love these. I love having a variety of intro themes, even if they are too long.
And Kishore Hari.
Hello. We're getting into like a chiptune rut here, though. I want to get like, where are our heavy metal fans? Where are our folk rock fans?
You mean like you want Tool? Just say it, right? You want
Tool
tested. This is only a test podcast in 15 seconds or less intro theme. Someone out there, please make it.
You know, I'm 20 years too late, but I just discovered Audio Slave. Does that count? It's like, sure. No. I had no idea. Rage Against the Machine basically took the band and like set aside the vocalist and took the guy who sings for
Soundgarden,
Stone Temple Pilots, STP,
and made a new band.
Sorry, Soundgarden. Right. Yeah,
I had no idea, and I love it. It's fantastic.
It's you know, RIP. It was Chris Cornell.
Yeah, that was the guitarist. I thought.
Yeah, I mean, my music's taste stopped evolving in like 1997. So yeah, Audio Slave's right in my wheelhouse. So.
Like a stone, indeed. So we are taking intros. If you want to create one, you can always email me, norman@tested.com. I promise we'll use in the future. We have a few in the queue. So I want to thank those of you out there who have already created some cues for us, and we will get through those. And then maybe we'll do a special episode. Should we do a deadline? I mean, we have enough to almost get through the next couple months.
No deadline. No,
or is it some type of tournament style where after 2 months of submissions, after we listen to eight of them, we'll then take those eight and pick our like favorite two to move on to the next stage?
Okay, Labor Day then.
Yeah. All right. Okay. At Labor Day, we're going to go back, replay the ones we've played before. And hopefully they're still on SoundCloud because I haven't downloaded a single one of them. And then we will pick our favorite of that batch. How are you guys doing this week? You guys been doing any building, testing, making of things? It's not a big news week, so what are you guys doing?
I have something that I have been testing, and it's I treated myself to it. It's not cheap. It's a sound bar to end all sound bars. Okay, have you heard of it? It's the Sonos Arc.
Yes.
Okay. You have heard of it.
I
was never a fan of Sonos products for no reason other than I just felt like they were this kind of isolated system that, you know, wanted, it was almost like Apple where they wanted you to buy all of their own components and build your home audio space.
A walled garden of hardware, but also a mesh network for audio.
Exactly. But I've been living with the built-in speakers to my TV for the past 5 years, and we're watching so many movies now. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's a 65-inch TV, too. It's like humongous, and we've had this kind of lo-fi audio. And we're watching so many movies now. Yeah, as a family, like we've even developed this whole new system. Instead of like all being democratic and sitting down and deciding on a movie, we do what we call Request Fest, and we all go downstairs and we do every night that we watch a movie. It's one person's pick, and they care about no one else's opinion, but everyone has to sit through it.
All right. Do you have a list of things that annoy you, like of the past picks that you want to air out? Like,
no.
What is your son pick that you have disapproved of?
Well, like last night, Roman Holiday was my wife's pick.
Oh, all. It's a lovely film.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd never seen it before. And but, you know, Audrey Hepburn, you know, at 23, you, like her first movie, amazing, all shot in Rome. So like we have these new experiences that we otherwise wouldn't if we did, you know, did it democratically. And it's fantastic. The point is we're watching a lot more movies. And so I said, well, I want surround sound again because I used to have it in Chicago. So then it just kind of coincided 2 months ago, the Sonos Arc reviews hit and everyone's like, this is the sound bar that it will blow you away. Like it's the one step below an installed like professional home audio system. Right. So I bit and I said, okay, I'll give this a shot. I bought the Arc itself and a subwoofer. Those finally came, those started shipping, and it sounded okay, but I wasn't getting the full surround thing. I kind of expected I would based on some of the reviews. The Arc itself, the soundbar, has like 9 speakers in it, left, right firing, as well as upward firing for Dolby Atmos, bounces off your ceiling.
Is there a calibration?
There is. It's kind of neat. It's an app that you download onto your phone, and then you hit calibrate, and it makes like these super trippy sounds that bounce all over your room, and you walk around your room and measure it. But I wasn't getting that surround experience, so I invested another like $300-$400 in surrounds. So now I have the full-fledged, I think they call it like a 7.1 because with Dolby Atmos, 7.1 surrounds, all this, like all, as we said, all the same brand, all Sonos. But it's, oh my God. I mean, I'm so serious. I am hard to please when it comes to audio, despite having my TV thing for the longest time. Like I love sound and I am floored. This thing sounds incredible.
You love even sound with, and yet you are using your built-in TV's audio.
Oh, don't shame him. Look, he's owned it.
You're welcome to shame me. I deserve it. I bought a TV that supposedly had nice sound. It's like the Sony thing with the big speakers on the side of the screen. They're forward facing. It was, you know, the problem is I'm also old and I don't want to deal with all the hassle of wiring up a surround sound system like I had done in my last house. It's just a pain in the butt and it's like so super permanent and it's just like messy. So that's one nice thing about the Sonos is like there's no wires.
Is it worth it for only for like those high end movies with like a ton of action, or were you even getting value off of this for Roman Holiday?
No, I wouldn't say I was getting value at a Roman Holiday, nor Frankenstein, which was my pick a couple of weeks ago. But Fury Road. It's like a surround sound demo from beginning to end, and the fact that, you know, it's all one brand and it's all calibrated, I think that has a lot to do with just like out of the box sounding good, because you can't tell where the sound's coming from. Like the lows fade seamlessly to the sub, back up to the surrounds or the front soundbar, and the entire spectrum is just so well covered and it's just filled the room. And I mean, you're in that one scene in that movie where you're sort of in a dust storm and there's lightning going everywhere. I mean, it is literally jaw-dropping. I'm so happy with this purchase, even though it set me back probably $2,000.
But just for the audio, that's more expensive than a nice OLED 65-inch TV.
Exactly. So it was definitely an investment, but I can't, like, I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 one afternoon just because, like, I want more. And it's just like the sound is so amazing. Tron Legacy, incredible sound in the disc battle in the Light Cycle Arena. I've been testing and I give it a huge thumbs up. Big fan.
Awesome. Well recommended. So you don't have any other Sonos products, I guess. This isn't like part of that walled garden. You're not doing the whole thing where you're putting these hubs in different parts of your house to do the seamless. Cause I got that appeal. I understood why people liked it when, you know, in the early thousands when it was a whole thing and you didn't have as any of these smart devices. But now we have the Amazon ones. We have Google devices, right? We can play music anywhere already and they're all app-based. Like remember Sonos launched with that dedicated, it was pre-iPhone, that a dedicated touchscreen controller. Like I feel like the thing that made Sonos special, and it's kind of gone away and they've also discontinued support for a lot of their old products. Now they're just a speaker company.
Yeah, no, I have no other and don't intend to buy any other. I have way too many Amazon Echoes and Apple products to invest in another ecosystem. Yeah. And thankfully, like it actually has an Echo built into it too. So it's already kind of, they've already adopted employing other people's services into their speakers.
Yeah, I think the jump from built-in TV speakers are the last resort. And especially as TVs get thinner on OLED televisions, like both the Sony ones, LG ones, they try. You don't, first of all, you don't get like really any bass at all, but you try to get volume out of that, you know, with the way they vibrate, and it's just it feels like it's very tinny. It feels from it like very positional, like from the wall that's coming off of. It doesn't fill a room. And sound bars, I think, are a perfect solution.
Do you both have a surround sound system?
I have a sound bar. Yeah, I'm from LG.
Do you have surrounds as well, like behind you?
Yeah. I got backs and a sub, and they're all wireless, right? So it's plugged in, almost like your system, Atmos for the ceilings. And you know, the other thing is that it also becomes one of those AV software problems where, you know, I'm using Bluetooth for my TV to the soundbar, and I'd say 1 out of 20 times it disconnects because I'm changing from Apple TV input to native TV apps, and then, you know, or doubles up and it's coming out of the TV and the soundbar at the same time.
Oh, funny.
And that stuff I hate.
No, I had to use, you can either do optical or you can do HDMI ARC. And right. So that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there are software built in the televisions to compensate. They actually delay, if you're not playing a game, they'll delay picture signal to match what the soundbar is coming from if you're using Bluetooth or something. Yeah. Kishore, anything you've been testing, working on?
I've been refinishing our outdoor furniture, which is a huge pain in the butt. So I've been sanding continually for what feels like weeks right now. But it's really satisfying to be doing some like very minor woodworking outside.
Let me know if you want to borrow a power washer.
No, I heard Gary's story. I'm good.
Is he fully recovered?
I think so. I went to pick it up a couple days ago, and he washed his car with it. He said he washed the entire front of his house with it. A power washer is one of those things, and I'm sure people are like have been championing them for forever, but I never thought was a thing that I could or should own. But now you can spend, you know, $150-$200 on a good power washer, and it kind of changes the cleanliness of like everything, your backyard, car, like the ability to get things clean from windows to the sides of your walls to stairs. It's
You just plug it into your hose faucet, right? Where does it store the pressure? I don't understand how it has constant pressure.
I think it's...
It has a reservoir and a pump.
Yep.
It's not a complicated device.
But is it constant pressure, or do you have to let it build up and then you have a period of time that you can use?
It's pretty constant pressure for modern ones.
You just get
I think there are some older ones that like really weren't able to actually do that.
Gotcha.
Well, it's like current, right? You get how much you get the additional pressure, but it's less water coming out in total.
Gotcha.
Or the rate or whatever it is. And then you put in your soaps or whatever in a reservoir, and so it is, you're tethered, but it's not an industrial one like the stuff that you see people cleaning the streets with that just take off like everything. But you know, it's made washing a car a lot of fun. Yeah. I built a computer yesterday. And there'll be a video on Tested, should be by the end of this week, about it. It's not going to be like a walkthrough or anything. It's just going to be, you know, my journey putting this computer together and some thoughts. But the thing I love the most about this is the PC case. It's one of those things that when building a computer is so tough because there's so many different configurations, right? Like based on needs and so many different options, whether you're going with Intel or AMD or what generation and how much, you know, what your specific use case is. But something we all need for building a computer is some type of chassis for it. And I had not upgraded my chassis since maybe 2 or 3 computers ago. I'd been using the same computer case, a Silverstone, one of those ones that almost looked like the old Mac Pros. I would say very much a inspired or ripoff design. But one of the reasons I love that old computer case was it rotated the motherboard 90 degrees. And so all the ports were sticking up, which made it easy to swap USB and swap video for like VR headsets. But it didn't have what I wanted out of a new computer case, which was USB-C on the front panel.
Right.
And so that was one of my criteria. And I asked people on Twitter late last year what computer cases they liked and got a ton of wide-ranging feedback. Some people love Corsairs. Some people love, you know, Fractal Design. Some people love like the very bare bones, almost like ones you can swap out the parts very easily with. I ended up getting a Fractal Design one, the Define R2. And Jeremy, you bought the same one for PC upgrade you did?
Well, only because you did, like I figured... I also did a PC upgrade earlier this year, and instead of doing all the research, I just asked you what case, and you said that one. The problem for me was that it ended up being too wide, and so it's a beautiful case, and it looks like it'd be a lot of fun to build in, but it simply didn't fit on my computer shelf.
I did that whole thing where, like, some of the best case reviews are on YouTube, and there's a guy who runs this channel that's just computer case reviews. It's beautifully shot, super comprehensive. And at some point, like, we might have reached, you know, peak computer case, right? In terms of the components, right? Like, they all support whatever type of water cooling solution you want, right? However many fans you want in there. Video cards are not getting longer than you really need. It's all,
Find it interesting how traditional hard drive space is almost like the afterthought now. Some cases just don't even plan for that to be the main thing.
Well, because it's all solid state drives and those are so small now. Like, what's the point?
Exactly. But like, I haven't built a PC in so long that I wasn't ready for that shift to have happened. It's cool.
And that could be totally, like, the next shift, right? Like, it used to be 5.5-inch bays and 3.5-inch bays were the thing for decades ago. We're talking about, like, the early aughts and the late 90s. And, like, when floppy disks went away, we turned those 3.5-inch bays into front panel, you know, ports, right? You buy those little adapters to put your SD cards in and have your USB. But then all the cases started building that in. So the 3.25-inch bay went away, and 5.5-inch bay was for DVD, right? Or some type of front panel, you know, knob thing that you can just audio for. But now, like, these cases don't even have any of those. And the next thing I think you're right is going to go away are hard drive cages themselves, at least the big ones, the 3.5-inch ones. Now it's just your SSD can be mounted anywhere. And the thing that I have two SSDs in here, and I actually love that they're mounted. I have them mounted so they're almost displayed on top of like where the PSU is. Mm-hmm. So they're not even in the cages themselves. And everyone's using M.2 anyway. Those PCIe, those are like, that solid state memory is so fast, whether it's SATA or PCIe. And most motherboards have M.2 slots. They're so small also. They just plug in and it's so, so fast. I think you and I both got a Samsung 970 Evo. And
it's my first one. I've never had M.2 until now. And yeah, it's super fast. And like you said, it's like a stick of RAM, you know? Like you just drop it in.
Yeah. So it's still like, I feel like building a PC right now is, it's almost like you're doing it for the sake of building the PC, right? It's like, there's not so much a need to go, like, you could build a much smaller PC, like, to have that decked out. Like, I'm not taking this to a LAN party, but it really is almost like you're building a display piece for your office. Like, that is the the totem for, like, computing happens here. Because otherwise, if I wanted to hide it, like, all of those components could be very easily hidden away in a much smaller form factor box.
Well, tell me about the RGB lighting you have inside your case, Norm.
I mean, can you see it?
I cannot wait for that fad to end.
Oh, I do see it.
Yeah, it's right there. It's on the ground right now. I'm moving stuff over from my old computer to my new computer. I mean, everything is RGB lighting. I will say, one of the things I love is there's LED lights on the graphics card, and not the stuff that like blinks and makes it glow, but where the power connectors are. I did the thing where, you know, cross my fingers, put the whole PC together, didn't put the sides of the case back on, because that's a jinx. Like 100% of the time, if you put the sides of your case back on, plug the power in, it's not going to post. Like, something is going to be unplugged, something's going to be wrong. Like, that's just my experience with it. So left the sides off, and it went to BIOS, but would not go into Windows setup because I didn't know what was on. So the graphics card wasn't detected. And on the graphics card, I got a 2070 Super. It uses 2 8-pin PCIe plugs.
Wow.
And there are little lights that tell you if one of them is loose. So both 8 pins, each of them have a LED light that either is red or glows white, and one was white and one was red, and that told me that one wasn't properly seated, the one that was red. And then once I seated it, it turned white, and everything was all right.
Wow. I'm glad that was there. You would have never found that. That's awesome.
I mean, having like visual debug, I think, is a good use of lighting inside computer cases. But having like some type of display, or, you know, like I think my new water cooler has a little LCD screen in there. I don't think that's really necessary.
What about the RGB RAM? Is that necessary?
No, I don't have RGB RAM. I just went for the most bare bones Corsair LPX RAM. 64 gigs though, one all out. But yeah, it was a fun build. It's been a while since I put together a PC, so it took twice as long as I allotted time for. But yeah, I'll put the video up later this week, and I think that was a lot of fun. But we have no top story this week. We had so much news last week. Let's just say last week's top story, that Lego set that we're still waiting for, comes out August 1st, rolls into this week's top story. But let's roll then into the pop culture. Pop culture, news culture. Hold on. I need to stop sharing. There it goes. Okay. Comic-Con would have been happening today. You're probably listening to this on Thursday when it's released, and recording this on Wednesday, but it would have been Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con's preview night. And a lot of people, us included, are feeling the absence of it. Although there are many programs and companies are working to kind of fill in the gap of Comic-Con with virtual experiences, with exclusives, and with also panels, virtual panels. Comic-Con themselves is running Comic-Con at home. I haven't been able to watch a panel yet because they haven't started. That's going to be this weekend. But Kishore, I know you have a few bookmarked that you're going to be watching.
I have 16 currently bookmarked, which I think is probably a few too many. But I've been going to a bunch of virtual cons. There was a virtual Star Trek con that the Seventh Order podcast, which was Aaron Eisenberg, RIP, and Sarah Loftin's podcast. And they had, you know, a bunch of like Star Trek people on. And I was watching a bunch of those this past weekend. And I'm going to kind of keep that train going into Comic-Con. There's a bunch of science ones, which I always thoroughly enjoy, really delving into like the science behind some of the kind of fiction stories we love. I'm really excited about The Boys season 2 panel. I think the trailers for that look really interesting. Aya Cash's Stormfront has really kind of got me sort of ramped up.
She's the worst.
There is a panel on the science of Back to the Future with a physicist that I really want to see. I have no idea how they're going to pull that off.
Are they just going to play the clip from Endgame where they called Back to the Future wrong?
I guess so. During the pandemic, I've gotten really into Magic the Gathering with my son, and there's a Magic the Gathering panel with Mark Rosewater that I'm excited about. I can keep going on and on. Oh, I'm really excited about What We Do in the Shadows, which is another show I've really gotten into. I think the stuff that, I mean, there isn't big like Marvel announcements and like studio announcements like we've seen in the past.
There might be.
So, what are you expecting?
I mean, I'm expecting an update on the Disney Plus MCU stuff, because we know Captain and Winter Soldier and the Falcon has been pushed back, but WandaVision has not, and they haven't showed anything from that. And so I would hope that they go all out, and that's the kind of thing where maybe they won't be showing the kind of footage that they would have been showing at, you know, a Hall H where they prohibit recording and people to find the shaky cam footage, but maybe a first teaser of some kind is something I can still hope for. Do you know if any of those panels, or if there's a difference between panels that are pre-recorded or recorded, or are they all pre-recorded for this, the ones you're looking forward to?
There's a mix. I think most of the ones that the science ones are not pre-recorded. They're just like Zoom kind of panels, I believe. But I kind of expect some of the celebrity ones, especially where they're going to like introduce some like production value and like, you know, either drop a new trailer, they're going to be pre-recorded in that kind of Josh Gad, you know, doing those celebrity Zoom one kind of feels. It will kind of feel. I've always been wondering, because Hall H Q&A is one of the cringiest and most interesting things at the same time. I really wonder if they're going to allow some sort of questions in any of these panels.
Well, people won't be able to ask for hugs, but they will maybe ask for shout outs, right? Let me take my selfie with you on this Zoom screen.
There's been amazing ones too. Like during a Good Place panel, like Janet and Bad Janet showed up together, and it was amazing. There was one during a How I Met Your Mother panel where somebody brought, like, came as Barney and read from a page from his book, and it's just like people in character asking questions has been amazing, but it's really cringy typically. I've been looking for since one of my favorite moments in Comic-Con ever was seeing John Lewis years ago at Comic-Con. Rest in peace, John Lewis. I mean, he had this amazing graphic novel come out about his journey in Selma called March, just one of the epic graphic novels of the last 10 years. And I was wondering if they were going to do something about him, because John Lewis, like, he came to Comic-Con a couple times, and he would lead a march, like, wearing the trench coat that he wore over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And so I thought they might do something as a nod to that. So I'm kind of keeping my eye out for something along those lines. But I'm really going to try to go to some obscure stuff, because now I don't have an excuse. I can get in it to any panel I want to.
Yeah. And the thing with the live versus pre-recorded, I understand the need to do something pre-recorded based on schedules, but I really wish that there was a way to do those kind of celebrity reunion panels or even the announcement panels with the live. I know there's technical difficulties, and it's very difficult to get organized, but there's just something about it being, you know, the tension of it being in the moment when they get to see the thing, and everyone, you know, not just that someone's going to press play, which we all get to follow along, and there will still be hashtags and trailer drops and all that, like, I really hope there's a way for surprises to happen live.
And the other thing is that I'm curious about is Amazon's having like almost like a virtual con. I don't know if it's associated or if it's counter con programming, but you know how they used to have that like IMDb boat, and like they would have a ton of Amazon stuff. And since like The Boys is coming, which is an Amazon show, I'm curious what Amazon's going to do, especially leveraging Twitch as a platform for a lot of that content.
Right. Well, we look forward to watching all that stuff, and I'm sure we'll be talking about some of that news next week. Something that's not quite news, it's still in the rumor mill, but worth talking about, is that Lando, as portrayed by Donald Glover, may be getting a Disney Plus TV show.
Well, now this, you're basing this off a single tweet, right? By Star Wars stuff.
That's being widely shared and reported, that's why I'm going to caveat that heavily.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting.
What do you mean interesting? Are you kidding me? This is awesome. Donald Glover has been part of some of the best shows on TV the last 10 years, 15 years. Atlanta, Community. I think he was the best thing in Solo.
Really?
Playing Lando?
Yeah. I think Atlanta is like just destroys Solo in terms of his performance, quality, all that.
But 100%.
But, you know, it's great. You know, I'll watch it. I'll watch it. I just don't think it's like the greatest thing ever, but I'll watch it. That's fantastic. But I'm also going to wait to see if it's actually confirmed.
Based on the type of show we know Lucasfilm can make with The Mandalorian, using the volume and that those type of CG environments while combined with some, you know, practical environments as well, what type of Lando show would you want to see? You know, is he roaming the galaxy, being kind of a scoundrel? Is he kind of like, what's the tone of the show? What is that thread? Or is it chilling with Lando?
Okay, I'm going to throw out some bad ideas. Ready?
Okay.
What if we get like a Cheers remake with Lando, where he's just running that bar, and we get everything that's happening in his like little bar. Everyone knows your name, and you come up to do some villainy. No? Okay.
No.
Then what about if we get Family Lando with Jana? Right? Isn't that the character's name?
That's old Lando, though.
No, but like at some point he has to have her as a child, right?
Would that be before that would be after the events of Empire?
All right, fine.
I'm imagining a show where Lando is like never caught off guard, where he's always one step ahead. Like he's setting himself up where he's in these positions that he can profit from, and no one else sees as far ahead as he does. And by the end of the show, he's like pulled one over on everybody and he's out of there.
Yeah. I think that's the right answer. The Ocean's 11 week to week,
right?
Lando Calrissian helm show.
What if the whole thing is him trying to get back the Falcon?
Oh,
but you never see the Falcon.
That is the that's the wrong answer. No, you got to let go of Star Wars in order to have a new Star Wars.
Let old things die.
Yes,
but not Lando. Young Lando. Young Lando's all right. Okay.
Yes. You know, it's that aspect of it that makes me hesitant at all. Just because they would be leaning on an old character.
Yeah. What if he's in a space band?
And it's a touring show. They're just going.
Yeah, it's a touring show. Yeah.
Right. And like things are, you know, galactic things are happening around, and he's just kind of waltzing through the whole thing, buying capes.
I feel like this is the greatest audition I've ever had for the Star Wars story team. So
that's great.
All right. Two more bits of news I want to talk about. One, Warner Brothers has officially postponed indefinitely the release of Christopher Nolan's Tenet. So
I'm laughing because a movie that's like going to be dominantly about time and time shifting is literally just getting pushed all over the place.
I had no idea that even the cast and crew don't fully understand the movie. Like that surfaced to me in reading about this. It's like apparently there's a lot of mystery about it. And
that's a bad sign, right? That's a very bad sign.
Apparently there's a lot of mystery about it is like the tagline for every Christopher Nolan or J.J. Abrams movie that you could make.
Is that true? Like there've been like people didn't know what Inception would be or Batman before.
No,
it's just
their movies are always shrouded in, you know, heady mystery and they unravel through the cinematic only viewing experience.
I see.
Yeah. That's why they got to go digital. And I'm happy. Like I watched that Charlize Theron movie, The Old Guard. That was a comic book that turned movie. I really enjoyed it and it did really well. I think they said 70 million households watched that and they're probably going to do a sequel. And I'm happy for them to put money in that. And that's one of those that I'm happy to watch at home. Although I would love the opportunity to watch Tenet in theaters. Netflix also is betting heavily on the Russo brothers. They of course worked together on the Extraction movie, which was written by I think Joe Russo and directed by the stunt coordinator for the Avengers films. And now there's a new film from the Russos and Netflix. It's their first $200 million film that they're spending, and it will be from Joe and Anthony Russo called The Gray Man, and it will be Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans, Captain America himself, as dueling assassins.
When you say that, you mean it's Netflix's first $200 million film, not the Russo's first $200 million film.
No,
they have a couple.
They've done, exactly. But for Netflix to spend a fifth of $1 billion, let's put it that way, to make, let's say, 140 minutes of content to get new subscribers as well as retain existing ones shows not only their confidence in their business, the business model of putting cinemas directly in the home, but also just the scope of the streaming business in general and how many, like unfathomably, how many millions of people rely on streaming as their primary avenues for entertainment.
And again, an argument to put Tenet online, honestly, like if Christopher Nolan would go for it, which he won't, but clearly Netflix believes that is the justifiable price to pay.
You think if Warner Brothers was, Warner Brothers was looking to make more than $200 million on Tenet in theaters. That's a $1 billion movie that they were hoping to make internationally. And, you know, they probably spent, you know, upwards of that on the marketing and the production alone. And so they would not be recouping costs. They would rather hold it a year until theaters are hopefully back open sometime in the future to make that and make it a big comeback to theaters event movie.
You know, this Netflix, bet it's a worthy one, even with Bright, which what they probably spent $100 million on, which wasn't very good. It was fine. They added a ton of subscribers for that movie. So with business booming during the pandemic, there's no reason that this bet wouldn't pay off either. I think where I get cautious is in the story they were talking about how they hope this launches like a, you know, a new series of films. So like, I'm like, hold up. Like, we got to make a good movie first. They got great directors. Yeah, I mean, they got great directors. They got great actors. They have everything set up. I love the idea of Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling in a spy thriller. All that sounds great. But, you know, I don't think this is as big of a deal as people make it out. A $200 million movie comes out every couple weeks, and this is just Netflix paying for it.
Right, but the difference is when Netflix spent a ton of money on Bright and on House of Cards and those first big, you know, statement pieces of content, one, the market was different, their growth rate was different, and you got to wonder, are there diminishing returns in terms of new subscribers, or is this just the upkeep costs of keeping people from defecting on the other streaming services? And that money is not much as much a statement these days because there are so many other streaming services as it was back then when they spent $100 million making their first big quote-unquote, you know, motion cinema, right? Their movie, like they would do, like they did with Scorsese, with The Irishman. So I think you're right, though, that the bigger play is creating a franchise, and a franchise that then they can own from the two-hour movie version to the television show version. And so they can have, as opposed to Disney, doing Disney Plus TV shows, plus MCU movies, they could have something all-inclusive, short-form, long-form, varying budgets, all in a universe that they're growing from the ground up that they would own as their IP. And that's the bet, I think, the risk with this $200 million investment. All right, let's move on to our next segment. You know, what probably would have been the top story this week if we had recorded the show a day later would have been the Xbox Game Showcase, because it's happening on Thursday. That's when they're going to announce what's going to be their first party and hopefully launch titles for the Xbox Series X.
Yeah, the next Xbox, right.
The next Xbox that is coming out the same year as the PS5. And it's going to be the back and forth. You know, they probably won't do price. And Sony's waiting for, you know, this news to happen before they drop their first party announcements. It's going to be a very exciting end of the year for gamers. And one of the things that I'm excited for, because I do think that, you know, there are a lot of diminishing returns in terms of the engine stuff is undeniably great. What they showed with Unreal Engine 5, great, but I'm curious, what can this extra horsepower get you? And it's going to get us, at least in terms of the Spider-Man game, 60 frames per second at 4K in a performance mode. So this is interesting, because I want to use this as a chance to talk about how games are rendered currently on consoles. You know, you have the PS4 Pro, you have the Xbox One X that can do 4K output. But many oftentimes, as places like Digital Foundry will note, they render these at lower resolution than 4K and then upscale. And very frequently, almost all of them, they're all capped at 30 FPS. And I don't think console gamers are used to 60 FPS in the same way that PC gamers who've spec'd out their machines and decked out their systems have been playing games at, you know, 1080 144 FPS or 2.7K 144Hz for a very long time now. And there are plenty of TVs out there that can do 60Hz at 4K. So that's a very exciting thing, I think, for this game.
Yeah,
go ahead. I was going to say, my son and I are trying to 100% Spider-Man. You know, one of the most beautiful.
Are you serious? You're crazy.
Why?
It's a lot of backpacks to collect.
Because, yeah. Like, he'll be a teenager by the time you're done.
We're at 88. We got this. We have just a lot of backpacks and thugs to beat up at this point. But playing that game reminds me of, like, A, the power of 4K, like, native 4K is going to be on PS5. Just because, like, those moments of just, like, when you're atop buildings and looking around. But like the deficiency of Spider-Man in a PC world with 60 FPS is very apparent in the fighting. And so 60 FPS, like especially in the context of the Miles Morales game, I can totally see how that's going to be like be a 100% changer. I couldn't be more excited about a singular feature of the PS5 than this.
Maybe it's my 46-year-old eyes, but I think I would be willing to trade resolution for greater graphic fidelity in terms of like the effects and, you know, shaders that they can apply, as well as, of course, 60 frames a second. Like that to me, and I'm with Kishore, like that's number one for me, is hitting that 60 FPS. But I don't know if I need 4K. I think I might be okay with 1080p, even on my 65-inch TV, because there's a lot of detail that I'm getting already from my current PlayStation 4, and I'm not complaining. Like what I would like in addition to that is just, like, I love the seamless loading that the SSD offers as you travel through worlds or between loading spaces. That's fantastic. But also, like, I would love to see more enemies on the screen, you know, and more effects and particles and that kind of thing versus going from HD to 4K. I do think that there is a diminishing returns there. I don't think it's as big an improvement as standard def was to HD.
Yeah, and honestly, the big thing is HDR, right? Which is something that's going to be more TV dependent than anything. And if you could do 1080 at HDR, you know, that gives you a better visual, just feeling of the game than going to 4K. But I think frame rate, it's something that console gamers have been honestly suffering from. You know, you see a lot of these even AAA games come out and the developers push the fidelity so high in terms of the resolution, in terms of the art assets, that in some of the very intense scenes with a lot of enemies, you're going to see drop frames. And you have games like Ghost of Tsushima that came out last week that have a difference between a 4K mode or a performance mode. And that's one where I'm struggling. I personally love seeing things at 4K HDR, but I can feel that it's not as smooth as the performance mode.
I would think that game would play great in like 24p, you know, because it is so film-like. And
with motion blur, like, it's motion blur all the time. There's a Kurosawa mode, honestly, in terms of the filter.
Like id Software used to talk about developing their games, and they would set out like from the very beginning on the drawing board, is this a 30 hertz game or is this a 60 hertz game? Because it the kind of action actually depends on that. So like for a game like Quake 3 Arena, they wanted it to be 60, whereas Doom 3 was 30. And the game that you're playing, Ghost of what is it? Kushima?
Tsushima.
It seems like that would work fine at 30.
I don't think you can map the language of cinematography that straightforward to games because of the ways the camera moves, that you're controlling the camera, even in third person. Mm-hmm. Like, I completely agree. First person, very fast pace, higher frame rate makes a lot of sense. The motion blur may not be beneficial. You may want that as a post-processing thing that you turn on and off. The extra fluidity in motion gives you the better response time. That's undeniable. But for a third person game, you're still moving the camera around the character at a wide arc. And if you're not getting smooth, it's jarring. It's not just, you know, the tight shots, like the cutscenes, that stuff I think would be fine at 24p, you know, your 180 shutter simulated look. But I still think you want fluidity in your own camera movements.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Speaking of games, the big news in video games this week, outside of what's coming out in the Xbox Game Showcase, is that Rocket League is now free to play.
I can't believe it hasn't happened already. Like, they already converted all of their loot boxes into, you know, whatever they call them, blueprints, so that and they've been doing microtransactions for years now. They clearly are making enough money on that. They don't need that $20 surcharge to enter the club. So yeah, Epic bought Rocket League. Was it Psygnosis or not Psygnosis? Psyonix last year, was it? And so yeah, so they're making the switch from Steam to Epic official this summer, and they'll be going free to play. No surprise there. I mean, my son has, my family's like personally responsible for over $100 of microtransactions in that game. So yeah, no easy choice.
It's, less about the microtransactions and the money that they would be making off of Rocket League. Honestly, they could, the microtransactions just keep people playing and keep that level playing field so people feel like the time they've put into the game is worthwhile. But it's all level about the exclusivity. It's all about.
Oh my God. I just get crushed in that game anytime I get in there.
But in terms of, you know, the value people get out of paying for.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, the personal investment and to make that popular, it's all about getting people to download this, the Epic Game Store on their computers as an exclusive. Other news in tech, Apple made a big announcement that they are trying to go 100% carbon neutral by 2030, along with some kind of nebulous announcements about things that they're already doing in recycling with the rare earth materials and like their Taptic engine. All that was super intentionally nebulous that was could only be read almost cynically as like, okay, you're kind of doing the bare minimum now, better than most, but it's still so, so long ways to go.
Okay, yeah. The scientist on our panel here was giving this the big thumbs down.
The thumbs down isn't about the carbon neutral. I think that that's great. It's aspirational. It sets a benchmark for other companies. They're a massive company with a huge supply chain. The issue with Apple is all about the mineral practices that are used in their component devices. You can't sit here and not talk about how they're extracting cadmium and other resources from the Congo and the incredible impacts that electronics manufacturing has on those continents and on the ecosystems of those continents. And the kind of like hand-wavy way they talked about that left something to be desired, as Norm alluded to. So thumbs down from the perspective of, I think the real work they have to do is there. It's not as much on like their energy sources for, you know, powering their buildings and some of their and their stores and their other elements.
Are there clear alternatives to the methods they're currently using?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are alternatives, but it's really like there aren't alternatives to those items. There's alternatives to the practices that are extracting those items.
That's what I meant. The methods,
systems,
of,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And alternatives to the business model that has worked for them, right, in terms of creating the supply needed to meet that demand that they've created. Let's talk about video games real quickly. Some lucky folks out there, people even we know, got to play Star Wars Squadrons and dropped their hands-on previews earlier this morning. Jeremy, that look of consternation is how I feel on the inside. I couldn't even bear to read these articles.
Oh, really? I read every one of them.
Tell me about them.
I you know, everyone seems to think it's TIE Fighter or X-Wing reimagined, and that is to say, like, some things have been modernized, like the graphics. Apparently this is a new version of the Frostbite engine. The graphics are extraordinary and everything looks fantastic, but the flight, the actual flight mechanics are kind of old school, and there is a steep learning curve and potentially a lot of complexity if you play it in the most difficult settings. So, like, you know, you obviously you're managing your energy in your ship between lasers, shields, and engines, and it's kind of micromanagement to whatever degree you want to make it. It can be somewhat automated, and I have a feeling, since that was kind of a sentiment that was expressed in all of these previews, if I were the developer, I would certainly put this some effort these last couple of months into smoothing that as much as possible, like whatever automation they actually have in there, make it work 100%, because clearly some people are a little turned off by that. Like, the game is just too hard to play, even though it looks like an arcadey flight sim, or flight game. The point is, it is more of a sim in the kind of the vein of these classic games, which, I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to.
Me too. Yeah, no problem on my end.
I'll be playing with a VR headset and a HOTAS, and trying to immerse myself in that simulation as much as possible. But at the same time, like, I do have to appreciate the fact that my patience for learning curves has decreased as I've gotten older. And so whatever they can do to onboard players, I will appreciate, and I think is really important to this game right now.
Oh, very good. And then last bit, Amazon has postponed their big Prime Day, big sales day. And that will happen sometime later this year.
I'm a little surprised about that because Amazon's business is like wildly up. Like everyone, like online shopping is up. So
maybe that's why they don't need it. They feel like everyone's shopping enough that they don't need to have these huge sales to bump up their numbers, and they're going to rather save it for later. I don't know. There's probably some strategic.
We're going to save you from yourselves.
Decision. I mean, Comic-Con happening this week is the great test of whether my poor impulse control happens both offline, in person, and also online. And how easy it is some retailers are making to buy things is not helping to with all these exclusives coming out.
Are there any interesting prints surrounding Comic-Con this year?
Mondo just put out this one by Martin Anson. It's a Star Wars one. It's timed edition, so it's not going to be limited in quantity until they stop selling it, I think, at the end of the week. But he did a great Rogue One print before, and this one, I think, just of A New Hope or the original trilogy, a great montage of characters. That one looks really good. The artist Daniel Danger worked with 27 other artists in that pop art, designer art community, and created this kind of quarantine montage of art. He's famous for doing these kind of houses, and in each of the rooms of the houses, each artist then got to fill that house up, the walls, with their own art. So yeah.
And now a moment of science.
All right, I'm not going to spend a ton of time talking about COVID. I have two stories regarding it this week. One comes from a series of antibody studies that have been done across this nation to really try to understand, like, in the U.S., how much virus is actually out there, because we know we're only getting a snapshot of people that are getting tested in terms of telling us of who's positive. And the people that are testing tend to be the ones that are getting symptoms, or and testing we know is still a limitation of around all of this. So
that's why the positive rate is so high, like 6-7%, right?
Yeah, in some cases, you know, 20%, depending on where you are. So the idea of these antibody tests, which are these, you know, quick tests, is over a large population, and that's important, over a large population, you're able to determine how much virus is out there, just as they look at virus load in like sewage and stuff to understand what the viral load is out there. And the reason it's over a large population is important is because the specificity and precision of these tests are not as high currently as some of the current testing, which is using PCR. So what we need to do is have a large enough sample in order to draw some conclusions. And what a number of these studies found is that we are undercounting the number of tests by anywhere between the number of cases by somewhere between 2 and 14 times, depending on the location. So the antibody tests confirmed some analysis from New York State that indicated people in New York, there might be a prevalence rate of close to 25% there. In the Bay Area, it looks like it's closer to 1%. But they looked across these 10 cities and compared the actual testing numbers with the prevalence numbers they're seeing when they scale these studies to the population around. And they're seeing a pretty wide disparity. So what this reinforces is there's a lot of virus out there, and a lot of virus that's probably being transmitted asymptomatically by people who don't think they actually have the disease, and they're carrying it around. And they become, this is either before they get sick or they just never do get sick. We think there's about 40% of people who get the virus who never experience any symptoms at all. That number sort of fluctuates. And really, they might be some of the biggest drivers of this. And these studies reinforce that. What it also does, what it doesn't reinforce, is the fact that we can get to herd immunity.
Hello, hello.
It's still a long way away. Hey, Norm, we just kept going.
God. Were you guys recording?
Yeah, yeah, we hit record.
He hit record. He started the moment of science about 3 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I lost my internet at home.
It's exciting.
So I just want to point people to, there's a great New York Times analysis of a paper that came out recently that looks at that. I want to tell a positive story about COVID, though. I want to talk about what's happening in Rwanda. So Rwanda is, well, first of all, I'll just ask, you know, Jeremy, what do you think when I say Rwanda?
Well, I read the story. I think it is a positive story for Rwanda. This is fantastic. I certainly don't think of robot caregivers.
No. And like, so that's the thing. I think when most people think of Rwanda, they think about either like the genocide, some of the stories from years and years ago. You also probably think of like a low resource country. And while they don't have the financial resources around this, what they do have is a lot of experience on the community level of dealing with pandemics. And that is really coming to bear in how they approach this. So there's a great report in NPR about Rwanda's response, and they've only had in their country about a total of 1,500 cases, which is less than like, I don't know, like Ohio had today. You know, so that, I mean, they're doing an exceptional job. And the way they're doing that is just really boots on the ground work. Like they activated a whole suite of people to essentially go test a lot of folks in short succession. And when they did, they collected additional data on who was getting tests. So when you got tested, it wasn't just like, you know, here's your test and we'll get send you results. They collected demographic information, different information of who they potentially were in contact with. And then they turned around those samples fast. And one of the ways they turned around the samples fast is they did pool testing. So instead of like Jeremy, you walking in and getting a test and you getting a Jeremy Williams test, they say, okay, Jeremy, how about we get everyone, like 50 people in line with you? We're going to pool all of your samples and see if anyone in that group is positive. So we only run essentially like one test for 50 people. And then if there's a positive in there, then we actually go in and do the tests on those 50. It's a way of much more quickly identifying positives over a wide range of people. And it's something that a lot of people in the U.S., even going back to my conversation with Alexis Madrigal, during the Living COVID series, emphasized is something that the U.S. should be considering doing in order to quickly test a larger number of people. And
they had no cap on who could get tested.
So right, it was free for everyone.
Still, in San Francisco at least, I have to have at least one symptom, which keeps people from going to get tested simply out of curiosity, which keeps the science limited.
Mm-hmm. You could see this in terms of the robot caregivers that Jeremy mentioned. There is like when you actually go to some of the hospitals, they have automated systems to check for temperatures and collect information. And some in like the, you know, kind of like the bigger hospitals, they actually have robots doing this work. I think it's less a story about the robots and more of this like collective action that happened in the city. And what it really emphasizes, this isn't an expensive endeavor. It was decisive early action. It was commitment to collecting and analyzing data quickly and transparently. And then having a whole host of people really working on driving it down once people that were infected were found. So it's not rocket science. This is almost like public health 101. But I found it completely inspiring to see that story come about.
So why aren't we doing more testing yet, Kishore? Can you answer that question? Do we not have the materials? Do we not have the expertise? Is our country just simply too big, or do we just lack leadership?
Oh my God, I feel like a politician with like a journalist grilling me. The answers are we are starting to hit limits on supply chains that we've secured. And like I think there are some actual policy mistakes that you can point to about securing the supply chains for certain reagents. Because we're not the only place that has a lot of cases around the world. And so those supplies to do all those testing is in short supply everywhere. So we're starting to hit certain limits in terms of what our capabilities are in terms of just the raw materials to do some of the tests. But also, I think there's still policies in place, like you alluded to, where testing is unequally distributed. So there are certain areas that have lots of capacity for tests and areas that are overwhelmed by the capacity need for tests. And so we're not redirecting our testing resources to where tests are needed to be conducted as well. And I think you're seeing that as a bit of a limitation that has started to be addressed. And lastly, I think there's some testing innovations that haven't come along that will really increase the cap, but there is progress being made. This pool testing, at-home point-of-care type kits, saliva kits. Those are all things that are going to drive up the testing regime. But we're not going to be able to get to the testing numbers we need based off the number of the amount of virus that's circulating in this country simply by using the PCR test. It's just the supply chains won't work.
That's interesting.
I mean, it could have worked if we made some different choices months ago, but not at this point. We should talk about SpaceX really quickly. They just launched a Korean satellite, landed a rocket on a barge. Again,
to be clear, the what they caught was being lowered from height it had to be at to launch the satellite into orbit, which is that low Earth orbit itself. So it launched from outside the atmosphere, it fell down with a parachute, and a barge net caught it as it was blowing in the wind.
It's amazing. I mean, we saw, I think they've launched almost 100, they've had about 100 rocket launches. They've landed, I think, close to 60. I think it's 57 of the rockets have landed successfully. And then the fairings, it's a much lower number because they only started that relatively recently. But it's becoming like old hat to them now. Like, this is just a thing that they're good at. What's amazing is the turnaround time now. They had a rocket launch 50 days ago and then turned around and launched again. That rapid turnaround is savings of millions upon millions of dollars. So I think that increases the amount of stuff that we can put into space. And that really changes a lot of the economics of space launch in a certain way. So I'm really excited about what that means. Golf clap for SpaceX. Push the envelope on this. And I think we're only going to see greater innovations in this in the coming years as SpaceX gets more competition from other groups like Blue Origin included.
Does it make you like Tesla anymore?
No, they're distinct companies that I can separate in my mind.
Also, congratulations to the UAE for launching the Hope rocket and the mission to Mars. And good luck on that journey. I think that's an important step.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask for more information about that because I read about the launch, but I don't know what the mission is.
Oh, I don't remember. It's like a...
is it an orbiter?
It's a probe that's just looking at atmosphere, I believe.
Okay.
But I can't remember what they're looking for in the atmosphere.
Okay, but it's not a lander.
No. Okay. They're not launching a rover. But we should be paying attention to the Mars rover, Perseverance launch that's coming up soon. Because the window for that is coming up soon. And then China also launched is launching a Mars rover this weekend. I'm forgetting the name of the mission. I apologize. That's just here in a couple days. And that's their first rover launch to Mars, which is a huge step forward for that agency. All right. I mean, if we want to get Mark Watney back, we need China to take these steps now.
Yeah, get those power cells over there.
And don't forget to run the safety checks.
They're not the one that had the accident. That's true. We had the accident.
Yes. Jeff Bridges made the wrong call. I think you're still the host, Kishore, so I'll drop in the music in post, I believe. Or we can
not
do
anymore.
It live.
Do, do, I do, made do, that change.
Do, 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 do. Here we go.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
All right. Again, this falls into rumor mill category, also from a single Twitter post. But there's an image of what purports to be a new Oculus Quest headset. It's a render of a white headset that looks very much like the Oculus Quest. And it's being circulated around the internet right now. So if you Google it, you will probably still be able to see it. Now,
the only reason that this is given any credence is because it was leaked by the person, the same person who leaked an image of the HP Reverb G2 the week before it was actually announced. And so apparently he has some connections, so it's possible. But honestly, like, I hope this isn't it. Like, I want some things that I see lacking, for instance, like an IPD slider.
Let's describe what is there and what does not look to be there. So you're right. It looks like on the bottom of this perspective view, no IPD slider. But what is there looks like a more rigid side strap, although it looks like it's a soft top strap. Theoretically, if I can't tell what material this is made out of, but it might be more rigid. It could be lighter. The front gasket looks quite big. And so the eye gasket. And so if the eye gasket is the same size as what's on the current Quest, then this headset might be a little smaller than the existing Quest. But the touch controllers that should go along with it in this picture, which are also white, look like they're the exact same buttons, grip button, trigger button. Same number of sensors. Placement sensor seems a little bit different, the placement on the headset itself. And one speculation is that this may not necessarily be, and again, pure speculation, the successor to the Quest, but it might be a sidestep, the thing that might replace the entry-level Go, maybe a Quest refresh, a Quest S, so to speak, before there is a higher Quest Pro that I know you're hoping for.
So what features would you expect from a Quest S? Because when you go from the Rift to the Rift S, you got a resolution bump, but they actually took some things away. They took away the integrated headphones.
They took away the IPDs. It looks like they're taking away IPD here.
Yeah.
Right? I'm hoping this is lighter. I think ergonomics is probably the biggest thing. It's lighter and you can wear it for longer periods of time. Maybe battery life's improved. That's a big thing. And maybe it's a slightly updated version of the processor for less latency and hand tracking.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, I wonder if there is some processor or subprocessor or something that allows it to support things that the next generation Quest will rely on. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's all we're going off is an image someone tweeted, but take it with a grain of salt.
Yes, much salt.
This week also saw the release of the Quest version 19 release notes in the software. So much has been changed in the year and a little bit since Quest launched. I mean, it feels like it's been around for a very long time, but they have new party systems, bigger parties, up to 8 people now, ways to jump between pieces of software together.
I think that's awesome. Like, that is potentially a huge feature, because if you have a party of people and you all want to play Rec Room together, but you only want to do one particular part of it, you can, instead of like warping in there and joining each other, it's just instant. You can join to the same game, to the same place in that game. I think that's pretty awesome. They have a public parties feature, which sounds terrifying. It's basically, you can open up a public voice over IP chat room to anyone in the Oculus ecosystem, even people outside of your friends list. So I don't know if I want to do that, but I'm sure some people will.
It's one of those things that I feel like that type of system, because you're in headset, it's not like you're chatting on a PC where you can see your Discord channels and you can see who has jumped in. Without some type of visual representation, like an avatar of someone jumping into your party, that's the thing that's going to feel most disconcerting, about just a disembodied voice either passively listening or engaging you. Even if you see their name pop up, it's not the same as this kind of spatial representation of, okay, another entity has entered the group.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they've done some, privacy settings, block lists. There's ways you can see your touch controllers interact with your visual hand.
Well, so now I don't know about that. Like, I think that that's probably miswritten. I don't think that you're getting hand tracking and touch controller tracking simultaneously. I think it's using the capacitive sensors on the controller to mimic where your hands must be.
So it's not when you see the touch controller, it's as a visual avatar, it's not just going to be invisible hands. They're going to combine that, graph that with the posed hands that they were already doing pre-hand tracking.
That is what someone on Reddit has said it will be, but it's also that also you know, is consistent with what we've heard from them, which is they can't do both at the same time.
Right.
The processor just isn't capable of it, at least not yet.
And you can also now take a photo screenshot in VR using the controller.
You actually could do that. You can do that with the last one too. Someone discovered it accidentally. It wasn't published, so they just added it to the release notes now. But yeah, you can take a screenshot by, I think it's holding the Oculus button and squeezing the trigger.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And then related to Oculus and the future of VR headsets, there's an hour-long video from Douglas Landman, who worked at NVIDIA and is now at, I believe, the Facebook Reality Labs. And he's the director of display systems research. And this is all about varifocal lenses and varifocal displays and the things they're doing, kind of an elaboration, a deep dive into what Michael Abrash had talked about at the last Oculus Connect when they had shown those prototypes. But the kind of what the various versions of the Half Dome prototypes look like, as well as the explicit ways they're using that varifocal lens to actually change how the games render and all the requirements of that to, again, solve for versions accommodation conflict.
I would have said this could have been our top story this week just from a pure interesting level, because this talk is just mind-blowingly fascinating if you are at all interested in virtual reality technology. It basically reviews a lot of the leaks that we've seen over the past year on Reddit of the varifocal technologies that they've experimented with, including this new one, which the latest one, which involves no moving parts and is very small, using I think it's six layers of LCD displays that can turn on and off and in a binary way, like can create all these different focal planes. Awesome, just mind-blowing technology. And this, the guy who gives the talk, it works under Michael Abrash and is very senior over there. And it's fascinating. It's a fascinating talk. And it's a look, and like he basically says, there's going to be eye tracking. Like that's one thing you can take away from this, is that going forward, they are putting eye tracking in their products. It's something they're looking at, you know, in quotes, but it's clearly something that he concludes is required in order to solve what the whole talk is about, which is my favorite topic, versions accommodation conflict, which is,
that could be the difference between, you know, a pro and a standard version of Quest, because that's very expensive computationally in terms of new hardware, but experientially you can have similar experiences. You just need to render differently for that thing.
Exactly.
For varifocal. But eye tracking could also be on both, because you get the benefits of all the interaction and all the extra input you get from eye tracking, as well as the opportunity, you know, of course, to serve up some.
100%. I would totally be in favor of varifocal lenses and maybe superior audio and maybe a more comfortable headset. All these comfort options being a pro, more expensive model that you could buy optionally, but they're completely, you know, compatible processor-wise in terms of the apps they can run.
Well, it wasn't our top story. It ended up being our bottom story of the week.
But that's bad framing.
our way to cap the show. It's the way to the bookend the show this week. Thank you all for listening. Sorry I had that connection problem. We'll find a way to merge the two parts of the show together. We'll try to include some of these links as well to the things we talked about. Again, we're still soliciting new intro themes. Keep it under 15 seconds. Shoot me an email, norman@tested.com. If you want to submit them, just post it on SoundCloud and we will play it in the future. But otherwise, we're going to come back next week, talk about the announcements from San Diego Comic-Con, talk about Xbox Games Showcase, and all that goodness, as well as our usual updates. We do have an outro this week, so taking those as well. This one comes courtesy of Black Powder Engine, and I have not listened to it either. Here we go.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
So this is only a test. We've been doing this for over 10 years.
I've only been on for like 3 or 4 years, and it feels like 8. I guess that's the wrong way.
I think that's exactly.
Can we talk about Squadrons now?
Soon enough, Jeremy. Soon enough. We'll be talking about Squadrons.
Not soon enough.
That's it. feel like that's going to be an ongoing theme until October 2nd. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.